Networking is presented by Maya Strategy Group, a leading market research and strategy consulting firm, helping clients in the pet care and animal health industries navigate strategic challenges for almost two decades. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Pet Working. I'm Peter Kenseth, Vice President and Partner at Maya Strategy Group. And I'm joined today by my colleague, Jessica Stewart, Senior Manager at Maya, and my compatriot in the pet care and animal health space. Jess, as we've mentioned before, is our in-house resident expert when it comes to animal health and animal health diagnostics, having come to Maya Strategy Group from IDEX, where she was a diagnostic support consultant. And Jess and I had the good fortune to be out in Las Vegas last month. Didn't extend that good fortune to trying our luck at the gambling tables, but we were very lucky to be at Western Vet and seeing all the new trends in the animal health and veterinary medicine space, as well as reacquainting with old friends and new faces. But Jess put together a great summary of key trends that she observed at the conference. And hopefully a lot of you saw that on LinkedIn last week. I know you posted about it. But as I was reading it, I noticed that it aligned a lot with the trends that I had identified. And I thought it would be beneficial to have Jess on the show and have us talk through the trends that she observed. So Jess, thanks for joining and welcome to Pet Work.
Yeah, thanks, Peter. Glad to be here. Yeah, I think that the four kind of key areas where I saw like a lot of the trends coming through were in nutrition, diagnostics, in pet insurance, as well as kind of technology. And I know technology, that's very broad. And a lot of strong technology adoption, inclusive of AI, which is really kind of pervasive, really across not only the pet industry, but also the human health industry, where I have some, you know, a strong background in as well. But really kind of the one that stuck out to me the most was just the adoption of AI in two ways, both in terms of, you know, diagnostics and care delivery, point of care solutions or in-house diagnostic solutions, but also too in veterinary software. And it's a way to support overall kind of business operations as well as practice operations and enhancing that kind of productivity. And I know that that ties into kind of the major issue also that it makes me think of is, you know, this whole idea of kind of veterinary burnout I can think just burnout is the best word, honestly, for it. And the stress that really comes as, you know, veterinary professionals in their day to day. And I really think that AI and this incorporation into software as well as into diagnostics can really, you know, move that forward and help support our veterinary professionals in their day to day and supporting our furry friends.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think it's surprising that we are seeing AI move in to kind of take the brunt and serve as a force multiplier when it comes to some of these repetitive tasks, which, you know, by and large are not the reason that people got into practicing veterinary medicine, right? You know, in terms of, you know, administrative burden, in terms of keeping patient records, keeping patient logs. You know, one of the big things I saw was a lot of like note-taking apps of, you know, look, we'll record the visit and we'll transcribe it to your patient record. And, you know, that's not only taking the burden, you know, hours of work away from the doctor following a visit at the end of the day, you know, but it allows them to focus more on the medicine. It hopefully is going to allow them to keep a more accurate record of the patient visit. They're not going to forget to write anything down. It's, you know, it will all be there. I mean, I think about it in terms of, you know, just in the last year, how many people have we seen adopt note-taking apps on Zoom? Or, you know, it's there. And you know, to my mind, there's no reason that, you know, assuming patient consent, that shouldn't be implemented into the clinic. You know, and then I think I have a friend who is heading up an AI startup in the human healthcare space with medical billing and coding, and the whole thesis of there's, you know, they've just went through a Series A round, but basically they found that AI could code more accurately and more efficiently than humans could. So why not take advantage of the technology where it's there? On the other side, you know, I think too, in the care delivery space, there's tremendous potential. And It'll be interesting to see because there's a part of me that thinks, yes, it's going to be the big players that are going to have the need to invest this and to roll it out. At the same time, something like this really opens the door for disruption and allowing, niche applications to gain a foothold in the space. And the one I keep thinking back to is Scope Micro with Cade Wilson, who's been on the show a couple times. Being able to do cytology using a microscope adapter for your iPhone or your smartphone, the quality of the camera on an iPhone or a Samsung Galaxy is, when paired with a microscope, you can get lab quality images there. And to be able to take that from your phone and then send it off, if there's an AI algorithm that is trained to provide like an initial screening, that gives a very cost-effective, expedient way to kind of do in-house cytology. I don't know what your thoughts would be on that.
Yeah, I do too. And I think that the biggest thing that, we saw with like sending it out, before these in-house cytology solutions existed was it was sending it out to the reference lab. It was, I think 3 to 5 days might have been the turnaround time, generally to get these results back. So I think the ability to be able to do it, faster and literally with the phone in your hands, I think that that just improves efficiency. And then I think, kind of just, and gives back the veterinarian professional back time to be able to spend with the patient, right? And I think, something on Royal Canin's booth was something about integrating digital tools allows for more, patient care time. And I really think that that's, the foundation of the incorporation of AI, never mind, other technologies in the veterinary space as we kind of make this shift. I think that it really has a lot of benefits. I think there is kind of the idea too of proceed with caution, especially as you think about some of these more advanced technologies like AI, machine learning, and things like that. I for my personal kind of perspective, I really think that the strong blend of like human expertise with AI and machine learning's capability is really kind of the best bet, to move this forward in a we don't want to replace humans, right? I don't know that I would feel comfortable with a robot taking care of my pet, but I think there is an opportunity to kind of blend those together, and that can really kind of drive AI or technology forward in the vet med space.
Yeah, I completely agree. I would say, almost allowing it to serve more as a screener and a force multiplier. In the way I mentioned in the example of cytology, if you're able to, use a Scope Micro type solution, get a picture of a cell culture on your smartphone and snap it off, and if there's an AI algorithm that, is 90, 95% accurate, that, can say, no, this is likely benign. This is, or escalate it. This should get undergo further screening. That's saving a lot of time. That's giving a lot of peace of mind to the pet parent. I think it's also, one of the and I made a post about it following the conference. One of the cool things I saw was a startup called Maven.pet, and they were taking a pet activity tracker, similar to the Invoxia collar that I've been trialing with Beanie for a while. And although it doesn't do location, it does heart rate, respiratory rate, scratching, sleeping, things like that. And they were selling it through the vet clinic and having it integrate with the PIMS. And then they have a team where they're analyzing that data. And if they're and in conjunction with an AI algorithm that can say, okay, this seems off, and then pinging that pet parent that you might want to bring your pet into the clinic. I think it's a really cool model. I think, whether they're going to be the winner in the space, I am not sure. But I think, that is in some form or fashion, going to lead to huge advances in veterinary medicine just from the perspective of, okay, I'm actually keeping track of this thing. Actually know what my pet's baseline heart rate is. I know what their baseline respiratory rate is, and I'm tracking that continuously. And you could very easily see a company like Mars, who owns Banfield, who owns VCA, they're the largest holder of veterinary practices in the country. And that's where I say I don't know that a Maven pet is necessarily going to be the winner here, because if Mars wants to do something similar with Whistle. They own the Whistle pet tracker. They own all these veterinary clinics. That's a pretty easy integration right there. But I think ultimately, you know, what we're looking at is the win is going to be parents are going to get alerted to potential issues sooner, and they're going to get them in to be treated earlier. And it's very similar to what you and I talked about with Ben Hantler at ESCA, now Antech, back this summer. It's, you know, it's preventative diagnostics, but it's taking it to another level. It's not just getting the routine fecal or blood test or anything like that. It's, you know, as simple as like tracking your blood pressure or your heart rate on a smartwatch, but being extended to the pet.
Yeah, and I think remote, you know, patient monitoring, and I know we've talked about this before, is, you know, just brings in all that data, right? And I know that that's Mars's really huge advantage, just in all the subsidiaries that they have and the companies that they own. But, you know, there's this idea of data and being able to leverage it and have, and be able to be proactive about it. You know, the more data you have, the more, you know, informed decision you can make. And I think that that ties in kind of the key finding I had around, you know, pet insurance, which was really like, you know, and you saw this through Nationwide's Pet Health Zone platform that they had. I actually got a, you know, a demo from one of the representatives at the booth. And I think my jaw was on the floor the entire time, because there's just so much data there that they're leveraging, and that you can see just in that portal. And it's free, so anyone could go in there and do it. And it doesn't, you know, have to buy pet insurance from them, but it's really like, you know, you get, you know, energy level and bark level and lifespan information. You can get, you know, common conditions that it runs into, that particular breed rather would run into. You know, maybe it's like, you know, poisoning due to exposure to toxins or harm, you know, ingestion of harmful substances. It will tell you like what the risk level is for that, what the costs might be around that, and what the potential pet insurance could be, you know, to cover that, or, you know, what would cover that under pet insurance. But, you know, and then there's more fun things too, where it tells you what the common names are and some fun facts about the breed. But, you know, I think it's really just like, I think just the data, I think this day and age, people, you know, treat pets as humans, right? They are our babies. They're treated like kids. They are part of the family. And I think that, you know, just creating that awareness around it and educating can really help, you know, kind of pet parents meet the veterinarian, and then, you know, kind of being able to provide that support to the patient, you know, both at home for the pet parent, but also to the veterinarian in clinic. I think it's very powerful.
Yeah,
data,
no.
You know, in and of itself, very powerful.
100%. Yeah. I mean, and I think, you know, I was talking about prior to the show about this idea of, I think we're really on the precipice of the true creation of an animal health ecosystem, so to speak, right? And you can look at that in a number of different ways, right? You know, in an ecosystem in terms of providing a better care model, or an ecosystem in terms of, look, we have, you know, this linkage between diagnostics, between data, between nutrition, between genetics, you know, it's all out there. And each one of those pieces contributes to some other aspect of the overall ecosystem, right? And I think in, you know, insurance in large part is sort of that missing link that is preventing the creation of that first type of animal healthcare ecosystem that I'm talking about, because it's not a truly unified system. It's not a truly unified playing field at this point, right? It's, I think one of the things that you see is, you know, and you alluded to it, you know, adoption of pet insurance is still in that 3 to 5%. I know you mentioned that in your key findings, and it really hasn't moved. I mean, the overall number of insured pets is growing. The market for pet insurance is growing, but it's growing proportionally to the number of pets that there are. And as we've seen more people bring pets into their homes during and following the pandemic, I know that's tapering off a little bit now, but, you know, I think in large part, that's what's driving the adoption of pet insurance. And I think when you start to see pet insurance partner more with companies in the animal health ecosystem, and to get back to that, you know, the wearables, at home diagnostics, I think that's a perfect opportunity. You know, it is PNC insurance. They can give discounted rates if they, you know, have pets that are, you know, wearing devices like the Invoxia collar and reporting data in and showing like, hey, I've got a good heart rate, I've got a good respiratory rate. My pet may be 10 years old. She's, you know, he or she is in great shape. And maybe, you know, maybe that gets factored into the actuarial models. And then on the back end, the opportunity for, like you said, pet insurance companies to sell their data. If you're looking at, you know, nutrition companies that are developing new diets and things like that, you know, being able to access, you know, there's not necessarily a one-to-one correlation for their trials or anything like that, but there's a lot of data there to, you know, to be able to access from a medical records perspective. And, you know, I think we're going to see it. You know, we started to see it a bit with Royal Canin and Wisdom Panel, Mars kind of taking their genetic data and saying, you know what, we're going to use this. We're going to sell this through the vet. We're going to create, you know, personalized health and nutrition recommendations based on the genetic data. But further personalization could go, you know, from, oh, and we have this wearable to say, since we started them on this diet, look at how their activity levels have increased or decreased. And maybe we were off medication based on the genetic data and we need to rethink and do something else. But there's a lot of potential out there, I think. And I think insurance is really that missing link that could drive more of it together.
Yeah, and that makes me think too of, like, you know, how the data could be leveraged as, you know, a tool for veterinarians. You know, you think about, you know, this patient comes in and they have this genetics data, and, you know, how can their, you know, if I'm picturing this tool that a veterinarian could use to help understand, like, what those health risks are, how that nutrition or supplements or, you know, a form of a diet, you know, could help them. And I know that all exists. I don't know if there's, you know, a fully unified tool out there. It might be kind of disparate at this point across, you know, different companies for different things, but I think there really is an opportunity there that would help, you know, the veterinarians in their kind of, you know, their care, in their care delivery, to be able to, you know, and I think just like it leverage as a tool, like as a resource to kind of help them to be able to guide them in making some of these decisions. Maybe AI is a part of that too. Maybe all of this data is fed into a model and it can, you know, aggregate it based on breed and all of these health risks to be able to kind of spit out and make that sound so easy. You know, this, you know, kind of nutrition recommendation or what have you, you know, kind of next steps for preventive care based on that particular patient. And again, tying it back to your original idea of, like, you know, this ecosystem, you know, it's nutrition, it's diagnostics, it's pet insurance, et cetera. So I think there is a huge opportunity there. I don't know exactly what it looks like, but I definitely see that there's a lot of opportunity with the ways that all the different ways, you know, that we're kind of collectively in this industry approaching animal health.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think we see it now with, you know, I think Wisdom and Embark and BasePaws, they all have like genetic risk analysis as part of their DNA panels. Mm-hmm. And, you know, now in partnership with Wisdom, Royal Canin is making those personalized nutrition recommendations. And, but that, you know, that is going to be married to, you know, their OTC and therapeutic diets. They're not really going to get into Individualis unless, there's not anything in the, you know, the ecosystem in their portfolio that can serve that pet's needs. Similarly, I think Hills has a partnership with Embark. So when you're getting your DNA results from Embark, it does include a recommendation for a Hills diet that would benefit your pet. But you can take that so, you know, we're just, you know, the genomics research is, you know, it's in its infancy. And, you know, Mars has the biobank project going on. I think it's in conjunction with MIT or Harvard. But they are going to be enrolling 10,000 pets and sequencing their genomes and then tracking them over the span of their life. The problem with a lot of this genetics research is that, you know, if we're enrolling dogs now and cats and they're on average living 12 to 15 years, we're, you know, a decade away at least before we start to get the data on how this plays out over the course of their lives. So I think we're very close to it. I think we're going to, you know, every year I think we see more and more as more is done in terms of that research.
Yeah, I agree. And I think that it could look a lot of different ways, right? Like I said, I feel like you are right. Absolutely. It's in its infancy. And I'm really curious to see where it goes. And I think too, like the idea, I guess, of like data sharing. I saw this new relationship that Zoetis and Covetrus have that are, really focused on, improving or enhancing the decision-making process, but also speaking back to the idea we had at the beginning is just like, the enhanced efficiency and accuracy and reduction in redundancy. I really think that there is, a lot of opportunity there in terms of the data. It's just, it'll just be interesting. And I'm really curious, to see how that does eventually come together. And hopefully I do see that sometime in my lifetime.
I think we will. I absolutely think we will. It's, I was thinking about this the other day, just at a general level, when we're thinking about AI and all the things it can do, I have to remind myself, like, when I was 9, I didn't have a computer, I didn't have the internet, I didn't, and that's only 30 years. When you think of how far we've come in 30 years, and then I think, my grandmother is 96, she'll turn 97 this summer. When I think about what she's seen in her life, like, I mean, she was born prior to the Great Depression. She was, she saw the advent, the car become the predominant form of transportation in the United States. She's seen us move from radio to television, putting a man on the moon, widespread adoption of computers, the internet. When I graduated college, the iPhone was a thing. And I know I'm dating myself there, but like, I graduated in 2007, and it wasn't until 2008 that the iPhone really became a thing. So I think it's going to be crazy, especially now that we have AI to kind of help drive these things and serve as a force multiplier, like where things are going to go.
A good point. I think we always are like, well, what's going to happen next? What's going to happen next? But, it's important to look back and see how far we've come, as well too. So that's a good point. But
yeah. I don't know, maybe that's a good place to transition. I know we were talking a little bit about, tailored nutrition and custom nutrition. I know you meant, you were focused on, the science-backed diets, tailored diets. On a corollary, one of the things I saw was a much broader acceptance of raw, natural, whole food nutrition. Talking, with Kendra Prasad, the VP of acquisition at the Farmer's Dog, she, they have a huge booth at WVC, and we'll be at Global Pet next week. You will not see the Farmer's Dog there because they rely on D2C distribution. The only reason they go and invest so much in attending WVC is they need to convince veterinarians that natural, raw, gently cooked diet is acceptable. And they said, more and more year over year, people are coming around to the idea that, this natural whole food nutrition is the way to go. And it's kind of funny to me because this is what our doctors would tell us, right? They wouldn't say, oh yeah, go eat a highly formulated protein bar for every meal. They'd say, no, make sure you get a balanced blend of vitamins and nutrients. And it's interesting because you can go out there and like do genetic sequencing personally and try to get like diet recommendations, but it's all going to be on like whole food nutrition. And I think, for as much as pet nutrition mirrors human nutrition and pet nutrition follows human medicine, this is sort of a divergence, is that whole food nutrition historically has been the outlier in the pet space. And this highly, GNC diet, for lack of a better term, has not really been in vogue in human nutrition for so long. And I'm curious as to your thoughts about that.
Yeah, I think that that there's like a learning curve perhaps that exists there too, right? And I think that nutrition is not, I think it's equally important when you think about, how do I want to say this? Let me back up. So I think like with nutrition, I think nutrition is food as medicine, right? So I think that there's a lot of that. You see that everywhere. When you think about human medicine, you think about malnutrition in the human medicine space, you know, being as an intake of, a low amount of calories, but it can also mean an excess amount of calories. And so I think that there's, this level of education that has to occur with pet parents too, to be able to understand how nutrition can be leveraged as a tool in their pet's health. And I think that there's, I don't want to say there's a long way to go in terms of understanding exactly how that looks for patients in terms of like the fresh food. But I think it'll be interesting to see kind of how that evolves. I think that there's also, this idea of, spend for people, for pet parents, not being able to afford that, I guess, cost as a barrier, to being able to afford that. But, we see that too in the human world, with organic food, you go up for a salad and it's, $15, but you can go to McDonald's and get a double cheeseburger for a dollar or two. So I think that there's kind of that, we kind of have to find that intersection of where it's, costs not interfering with that. And I think that ties into other things too, because, these prescription diets, those must be, can be somewhat costly too. If you think about that's coming out of the pet parent's pocket as well. So I feel like there's probably like a level of, education that has to come out of that as well. But I'll be curious to see kind of how Farmer's Dog continues to do and the other, fresh food types of companies. I know there's a lot of research going. I know you've had Dr. Templeton on here. I believe that was his name, from Primal. And, and I know that they were present at Western Vet and they were talking, too, about the advancements that they've made in terms of the research that they're doing. So I think there's a lot of work being done and I think it'll be interesting to kind of see what comes out of that.
I think we're going to continue to see it. I talked to Emma at Primal as well, and she said, it's more and more, they don't have as big a booth as the Farmer's Dog does, but and they'll have a huge booth, but I think that speaks to kind of more their sales model rather than the lack of acceptance from veterinarians. Emma was mentioning to me, a big thing that they were seeing is like one of the biggest concerns they're seeing from vets now is the population still concerned about DCM. And with their new kibble in the raw product, it has sorghum in it, which is a grain, which addresses those DCM concerns. But it is funny when we think about it. I feel like nutrition is often that overlooked component of veterinary education. We ask them to do so much. In terms of like nutritional specialists, similar to, dental specialists within the veterinary profession, they're fewer and further between. I guess the last piece of your takeaways that I want to talk about, we'll finish on a strong note here, because this is right in your wheelhouse with diagnostics. Talk to us about the unification of the reference lab and in-house diagnostics. And then I want to kind of put my hypotheses around in-home diagnostics to you, but I want to hear your takeaways on reference lab
so, and in-house first. I think, the biggest thing I was really seeing was that, they used to be so siloed. And I remember, and I'm not, specific to IDEX, but back when I was at IDEX, there was really this idea of like, you either go, you send it out to the reference lab or you do it in-house. And there was overlap, you could send, send in a chemistry test to reference labs or you could run it in-house, but there, not all of the clinics had in-house diagnostics. So they would leverage it, reference labs to be able to send those tests out. But, a lot, over the past, several years that I've, been around in this industry is I've really started to see that come together and really create this more kind of unified approach to it. And you really see that through Zoetis' virtual laboratory, where they more or less like it was just like, connecting their, pathologists with their reference labs, with their in-house diagnostics and bringing those together to be like, let's look at this, from all viewpoints and not just, siloed at reference labs data or siloed at in-house data. And that's not to say that, people weren't doing this, veterinarians weren't doing this on the back end, but there really is this bigger message out there, I feel, in the industry where it's like bringing those together, having all of that data, right, in one kind of, spot and being able to look at that and provide care based on that. And you see that too with like Antech and Heska's merger. I mean, that's one example, right? Like Antech kind of had the reference labs and the telemedicine and that, and then they brought in Heska and they kind of had the point of care. And now they just have this very like robust portfolio where they're kind of hitting on all the different aspects of diagnostics and care delivery for pet health. And then, I alluded to it earlier, is the other one is the data sharing relationship that Zoetis and Covetrus now have, where they're not, they are they don't directly compete, but they are trying to improve that data sharing for veterinarians to be able to look at that all in one spot and have it hit Covetrus's PIM so that they can see it all there. And I think that kind of shows that it's bigger than the companies and the competition and the business world, if you will. It's really about coming down to the data and how that they can better care collectively for that patient. And I thought that that's a really big message. And I think that also supports the whole veterinary burnout idea and an issue that is still very present, but there's solutions that are coming out to support that. But I feel like this is another element or another component of that as well, where it's just really bringing that together to be able to support care delivery and patient care.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and I think, so central to that is the idea of, it's almost an omni-channel care delivery philosophy, right? You want to meet the pet parent where they want to be. And, when we see in-house, and point of care testing, that kind of alleviates that concern of like, I'm going to get my results while I'm in the clinic. I'm not going to have to go home and wait for a phone call. I'm not going to have to wait for my sample to be shipped off to a reference lab and then to go through processing and, whatever it is, whether you're waiting on, a reading of a biopsy on, a potential cancer diagnosis, or whether you're waiting to, if your clinic doesn't have an in-house SNAP test analyzer and, you're waiting to hear if they have heartworm or not, or, the results of a urinalysis or anything like that. That takes care of that component. The one that I saw, I'm fairly bullish on, I think ultimately there are a lot of things that pet parents have to bring their pets to the vet for right now that they really probably don't. And what about like where pets are most comfortable? It is not in a vet clinic. Like, don't I give veterinarians all the credit in the world? I know they try to make their clinics as warm and, so many of them are free. I see from personal experience, and I know Peony is on the more nervous slash anxious end of spectrum, but like you put her in a sterile room and shut the door, and he knows, like, when I come here, I get shots, I get blood drawn, it's not, unfortunately, it's not a place that like they have happy memories of, and they can't communicate how they're feeling about it. And it's like having a wearable that can give you like an heart rate, a baseline heart rate, is so getting one of those in the clinic. Similarly, I think if we can like lower our pet stress levels and increase the convenience and ability to provide care, QSM Diagnostics with their FGX kits, I think that's could be really groundbreaking. And I know you and I a while ago talked about Oncotec, the urine sample. I was thinking of it the whole time while I was talking to Edgar, because he has the Wee Wand, where you can extend the wand underneath your dog to collect the urine sample. And I just look at it like, if you can collect urine and fecal tests, and I'll be putting one out with in Diagnostic and Octavian Floresco that I reported. They actually have an at-home blood diagnostic, which I don't know that I would feel comfortable taking a blood sample. Personally, I think that, is probably one of those things you still need. I guess it's like a paw prick, and similar to the way you would, and they're using it, I think, for monitoring like liver. Back and revisit that conversation, make sure I'm capturing that correctly. But it's giving, your liver readings, and it shows up right on your phone. It's this thing that plugs into your phone. You put the drop of blood in. But I look at it like, everybody I talked to about it was like, look, none of the big guys are really into this yet. And I just wonder, are they seeing a blind spot? You know, are the IDEX and Zoetis and Antechs and Heskas of the world just missing, you know, that this is something they need to add to their portfolio and that this is going to be a disruptor for them? Or, you know, is it something that they're going to eventually start to roll out? Because I do feel like ultimately what is going to drive better patient care is making it more convenient for the pet parent.
Yeah,
And
and
sometimes
for the
it's
pet.
being able to, yeah, and
And
for the pet,
yeah.
absolutely. You know, the parent's the one who's making the decision, but if you care, you know, if you don't want to see your pet stressed and anxious, you know, if you're a cat, you know, we all hear the story, oh, look, my cat runs away the second I bring the cat carrier out. Like, I don't have a cat, but you know, I hear those stories. So that solves a problem for them. I know personally, like, I try to bring Peony by the vet and just put her on the scale and give her treats just to like remove that negative association. But the thing is that only gets me in the waiting room. And the second I bring her into an exam room, she knows,
Yeah.
something's going down. I'm gonna get some kind of test today. And you know, yeah, the vaccines and all that, you're still gonna have to go. But I do wonder, and another one that I saw, that thing that I saw there that I also think speaks to this, is the idea of the mobile vet clinic. I don't know why we don't, you know, at home diagnostics, mobile vet clinics, I think it's a huge untapped opportunity because I think most people would prefer that their pet be treated in the comfort of their home, you know, to the extent that they possibly could be.
Yeah, I think it's an opportunity, and I kind of wonder, and I don't have necessarily any basis for this, but no, I really wonder if maybe the kind of major diagnostic companies perceive it as a threat to their business. Is it, you know, but it is, you know, if they think about it, maybe they do have a blind spot to it, but it could be, you know, just an additional, you know, revenue stream for them, right? If they were to offer some of these more basic tests as an, you know, at home diagnostics, you know, like you were talking about, you know, QSM with the Wee Wand, right? It's just like, you know, the more you can enable the pet parent to collect a better sample, that's also going to lead to better data. You know, right? If you don't get enough of a sample, then they can't run the test. So you got to go back and, you know, try to get the sample again. Or, you know, if they're, you know, in clinic, you know, and they're nervous and their heart rate's up and they're shaking, you're not going to get very good, you know, heart rate data or vital information, right? Because they're just in this state of just anxiety. So I feel like it is an opportunity for, you know, the pet parent. It screams convenience to me, you know, as a, you know, as a, just as a consumer, or, you know, thinking if, you know, how that could be just more convenient. It could be more cost effective if I'm able to just collect, you know, a urine sample at home and send it out, and it's only, you know, this many dollars versus, you know, I'm going to the clinic, then I'm having to pay that kind of office visit fee. So it's interesting because I feel like it could go either way, right? It could be seen as an opportunity, but you know, maybe it's also perceived as taking revenue away from the veterinary clinics as well. But you know, it's interesting. I think there's a lot of ways that could go, but I definitely view it as convenient and both for the pet parent as well for the pet.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting with QSM's model, they sell almost exclusively through the veterinary. Like you can go and get tests on D2C base there, but where they're finding the greatest adoption is with vets who are using them for like rechecks, right? Or even just general wellness, being able to say, like, look, we'll drop ship to the customer's home, they mail it in, it goes to our reference lab, and we send you the results. And to me, it's like, I don't know why a Zoetis, IDEXX, Heska, Antech can't, you know, it's making use of their reference lab. The only thing you're cutting out
Yeah.
is the sample collection from the veterinarian. And if you're selling it, you know, through the vet in, you know, whether that's through like a vet source or a Covetrus or, you know, anything like that, where they're still, you know, or a Chewy, where they're still seeing the revenue.
True.
It seems to me like it's a win for all parties.
Yeah, no, that's a good point too, because you know the major diagnostic companies, you know the Zoetis's, the IDEXX's of the world, you know they also have all of that like logistical, you know the logistics set up behind that. So I feel like your point is, you know like QSM, you said it's driven through the veterinary clinic. That makes a lot of sense. And yeah, I feel like at that in that light, it definitely makes sense as kind of a win-win for everybody, a win-win-win. for everyone, pet parent included. So yeah, it's interesting. And then the mobile diagnostics I think is great. And I liked really seeing the van that was there at WVC a few weeks ago. And I thought that's just a really neat idea. And back when I was at IDEX, we would have those kind of few and far between calls where the customer, they had a mobile vet and they were, making house calls and, sending in maybe more routine testing. But it was always just like, I just remember, back in the early days where I was just like, oh, that's a really good idea. And, that was over a decade ago now. So, I feel like there's definitely an opportunity there to bring that convenience, to bring that expertise to the home of the pet too, maybe you don't want to collect the urine or the fecal, or maybe you need a more advanced test. Maybe you need a professional to come in and take the sample or do it right in the comfort of their own home. I think there's partnerships, and I'm drawing a blank on the company, but for tick-borne diseases, you see out in the southwest, where they're coming around and they're visiting their patient's house and they're collecting that blood and being able to run that tick-borne disease. I think it's for Chagas disease. And I forget the company, but you're interesting.
Anavive?
Just bringing, yes,
Yeah.
that's correct. Yeah, so just bringing that convenience, to the pet parent, but also that, leveraging that expertise, as well, and having the professional still be able to conduct the test, for the pet parent. I think it's a really good idea, and I think coupled with at home diagnostics, I think there's a real opportunity to, have regular tests done, regular UAs, regular fecal tests. To your point, where it's maybe it's collect the urine sample at home as part of your preventative wellness. And then you come in and maybe you have a vaccine you need to get and things you have to do in clinic. I think that that's an opportunity and can reduce the anxiety levels for the pets and maybe to costs for the pet parents.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I think, with the advances we've seen in point of care testing and at home diagnostics, so to speak, that makes the idea of a mobile vet that much more viable because, they're able to do, a sizable amount of the work that they and the testing that they would need to do on site as opposed to collect samples, mail them off, they can function. Maybe, not with the same level of efficiency as a traditional clinic, but they can approximate it. And I think it definitely gives that ability to craft your own lifestyle, serve patients in areas where maybe there isn't a vet clinic where it's an underserved area without
Rural
having to
areas as well.
yeah, exactly, where maybe it doesn't make sense to build a brick and mortar de novo clinic, but you're all right with driving your van around. I think it has a lot of potential. So,
I do agree.
well, cool. This is a recap of WVC of Western Vet. I think there it's really cool what we're seeing. I'm excited to see it unfold over the rest of the year. I know we'll probably be checking back in on this stuff periodically. We get to leave the veterinary side of the world behind, by and large. Next week, we'll be down in Orlando at Global Pet, looking at all the latest trends in pet nutrition and treats and care. So excited to be returning to Global Pet, and Jess will be down there with me. So if anyone wants to meet up in sunny Orlando, I hope it's sunny anyway. We'll be there and drop us a line. But for the time being, this was a fun look back at WVC, and looking forward to further exploring these trends over the rest of the year. And we'll be back with an update on Global Pet soon.
Sounds great. Thanks for having me, Peter.
Absolutely. Thanks for chatting, Jess.
Absolutely.
Bye, everyone.